I'm Rachel, the creative director for Ram Dass's Love Serve Remember Foundation, and I'd like to welcome you to our Inner Academy, a virtual Dharma hall where our family of wisdom teachers will help you navigate your daily life by bringing ancient wisdom into a modern context. With over 200 hours of audio and video teachings, meditations, and practices from teachers like Ram Dass, Krishna Dass, Sharon Salzberg, Jack Kornfield, Roshi Joan Halifax, Joseph Goldstein, and many more, the Inner Academy is your core resource for finding balance, presence, and navigating the ups and downs of your daily life. The Inner Academy has guidance for every step of your journey. Choose from an annual or monthly membership and gain access to past and future courses, retreat replays, virtual community, and much more. If you've been familiar with Love Serve Remember Foundation for a while, you'll know that most of our offerings are given freely or on a sliding scale basis. So when you subscribe to the Inner Academy, you're paying it forward and bolstering our ability to continue creating accessible offerings for all in the future, as Ram Dass wished for us to do. Be here now and start your journey with Ram Dass's Inner Academy today. For more, visit ramdass.org/Inner Academy.
Hello and welcome to the Shakti Hour podcast on Ram Dass's Be Here Now network. I'm your host, Melanie Moser, and today we're continuing our Shakti Sacred Music series, conversations with musicians about sacred music and the feminine voice. My guests today, Deva Pramal and Miten, are leaders in the field of sacred music. They sing and chant and lead live events around the globe for millions to come into the vibration of mantra and chanting together and sangha across the globe. So, such a treat to get to spend an hour with the two of them over the internet talking about this subject in particular and reflecting on Deva's latest record. And we've included some clips of that throughout. And Deva and Miten also do a bit of singing and a blessing for us towards the end of this podcast, which I hope that you will enjoy very much. I feel so fortunate to know them as much as I do and to get to share this talk with you and their reflections. Please do go to the Shakti Hour page at BeHereNowNetwork.com to find links to all of their music and upcoming events. You can also follow along at ShaktiSacredMusic.com and on Twitter at Shakti Hour. And please do remember to subscribe to the Shakti Hour on iTunes. Thank you so much for listening and have a lovely and beautiful holiday. I'm just so happy to connect with you and to celebrate with you both Deva, your latest record, and Miten, your full recovery from this past year.
Recovery from life. It's been a 70-year project.
Right, right. Well, that's a pretty good model you got if it ran 70 years without a need for a severe tune-up. So I think that's pretty good. So I really wanted to connect with you because I loved our talk, Deva, from right about this time 2 years ago. And I got more involved and deeper into your journey and your music over the couple years. And then this last fall, I just started a special series on sacred music and the feminine voice. And I've been talking to different musicians and artists about different musics from around the globe. And we've been kind of talking about what makes that sacred and having a really interesting conversation about what is sacred and what is sacred music. And I thought of you two, obviously, because so much of what you do is clearly held in the sacred realm. But then I know, Miten, there's a lot of pop and folk music in your life, mm-hmm. too. So I'd love to just hear, off the cuff, your reflections on what is sacred music, or is all music sacred?
Yeah, that's a good question, huh? I think all music is sacred, yeah, but I think it's misdirected, and I think, you know, there's a lot of music that still can be sacred because it's reflecting the musicians who are playing it. So whether it's punk or whether it's heavy metal or whether it's just pop music or whatever, it says something about the people who are conveying that kind of music, and that's just as much God as everything else. So we can say that all music is spiritual. For us, our music is not about excitement. It's not about exciting the senses. So even my songs are that too. So I don't see my songs as folk music or pop music or anything. I see them as sacred as the mantras. For me, it's all the same. It's just a way of bringing a sense of silence to the gathering so that we can be in a state of relaxation, awareness, and not be thinking about our lives back there in the other world where we have to grow, we've got the stress and everything else, you know. And really, that's what, for me, that's what's sacred. And I can just say something too about Deva's voice and the femininity and the power of femininity, because she can't speak actually for herself in that way, because of course she's just sending out who she is. But for us who receive who she is, we have a way of describing what happens when she sings. And it's just what I've come to see over all these years is that Deva sings from a place that's beyond emotion. There's no emotion in Deva's voice. So we have this blank spiritual energy coming through with the mantras, and there's no reason to emote. They're beyond emotion. So if you try and emote a mantra, you end up silly, you know. So the Deva, it's in, so it's just this incredible sense of feminine energy and a purity that comes through, and I've experienced it for 20 years now, so I know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm. yeah you have a pretty firsthand experience to that. And I love what you said up there about you cannot emote it. Can you say a little bit more about that and how that
David
is sacred?
I mean, it's, you know, mantras don't have emotional content. There is the heart is in there, and the heart is, and the longing of the heart and the passion of the heart for being in this divine mystical space, and the longing for connection and bliss and love of creating union through singing and chanting. That's all in there, but there is no personal kind of emotion in there. There's no kind of personal love affair or personal victimhood, which is in a lot of, you know, in a lot of songs, pop songs nowadays, you know, like there's no poor me, there is no kind of, there's just no personality basically. And it's very subtle. And it's, I don't know, for me, it's natural because that's the only way I can sing. I don't know, so it's just, I don't really have a choice. So I like that Ritten sees it like that, because that's all I can do anyway.
Yeah, well, great. Yeah, I do remember you telling me that you had some classical singing training in your early years. Is there any memory of that different kind of experience of singing?
Yeah, but I mean, that was very superficial. It was in school, and it was music that I didn't really relate to. You know, there was classical music, songs, Schubert, Schumann, or whatever. It didn't touch me, you know, and I learned them because I had to sing them and
stood you in good stead, though.
Yeah, I guess it gave me a good ear. It gave me a good ear for melody and, yeah, and harmony, but yeah, on a singing level, I never felt connected to what I was singing. I didn't really enjoy enjoy singing those songs very much. You know, it was a task. It was something difficult where I have to kind of press myself into a certain form that's been given to me by my teachers or by this particular song. And then when I came to Osho as a young, you know, as a 10, 11 year old, I just loved singing in the communities. In Osho's communities, we used to just get together and sing and dance. And it was like a, you know, very free meditation. There would be just an hour or two where we just would sing and dance, everybody in their own space, no talking in the room, no interaction like that. And then when I was 17, 18, I met Miten, who was actually the one creating this music for us to sing and dance and to. And I was like, wow, you know, I want to be part of this. You know, this is the music I love singing. And that's basically why I asked Miten, would he have a listen to my voice if he thought I could contribute in some way? And first he was a little doubtful, but then a few months later, he was like, oh, maybe we can give this a chance. You know, maybe there's some potential in there, some blend that gets created with the two of us and the rest, you know, this kind of story. But so it's about feeling at home in what we sing and the music we make. When we feel at home in it, we are singing our song. Mm. Mm-hmm.
So it could be that another person's experience of that kind of training, of that kind of singing, it would be a reflection of their spiritual gift.
Yes, I'm sure it is, yeah.
But on your path, it came to you through this freedom of expression in a spiritual crucible, that dancing and singing together with all of those people. I can just feel how that clicked open into another realm for you then.
It was, she recognized, you know, that it wasn't just music and dancing as in, a club or a disco. It was in the ashram in India, you know, where you were there. The music would have a totally different content. It would be coming from silence. The music would appear out of silence, so we would be, and then it would disappear back into silence, and we would all be in that silent space. It would help us to move deeper into ourselves and into our own interiority, you know. So that's where we learn that music is precious, and it's a spiritual tool and not just something to evoke sexuality or something. And it has a quality that can take us into the deepest part of ourselves. And that's why Deva and I play music. It's because we want to stay contacted with that deep part of ourselves, because that is most precious in our lives, you know. So that's what the music and the mantras do. They help us to be silent together and to be together and flow in an energetic way and not in an intellectual way.
That's so beautiful. I love the idea of sacred music arising from silence. You know, I've talked to a bunch of different people. I spoke with a female Jewish cantor, a rock drummer, a jazz trumpet player. And, you know, this whole idea, everyone seems to connect with the improvisational aspect of music as kind of the sacred heart of it. I guess it's kind of what I'm getting from you. It's not necessarily improvisational like a classical jazz improvisational or whatever, but this arising from silence kind of connects me to that idea of improvisation, no?
Yeah. It's what makes it spiritual, you know. And when you're talking about, you know, like Coltrane or some, you know, that music that is purely improvisational without even form or structure, you know, or no structure that actually non-musicians can recognize. So, you know, it takes it away from the mind again. And I think once you're in an improvisational space, like even though we, like this last tour, I've had experiences many times, actually, not just in the last tour, but especially on this last tour with, we have with our band now. And there were moments when I honestly felt that the music was being played, but there were no personalities on the stage. And it was an amazing feeling. It was just, it was so clean. And in that place is where you can improvise. That's where you're safe, because you're so into it and you're so aware of the footsteps that you can dance in there, you know. And that's what makes music, you know, spiritual, really, I think. And, you know, the other thing about the mantras is that we mustn't forget that they're powerful healing sound bites that are scientifically discovered thousands of years ago. We're not the content, you know, of what we're singing is nothing to do with lyrics. They're sounds, indigenous sounds that were discovered before the religion that adopted them. So you're going back to thousands of years with these mantras, and they're not just playthings. They're powerful entities, and once you put them out into the room, you know, even if you're playing rock music, if those sounds are going out, then they're generating energy.
Right. So on top of that, connecting through silence in the space of no mind with other people, you have this added element of the profound vibration of ancient sacred syllables.
Yeah. And those syllables are what is creating the energy and creating the vibrations.
Yeah, it's almost the other way around. The mantras are there, and then we create the space around them to carry them into, you know, into our hearts, into the empty sky. And that music is so, we have to be so respectful and sensitive to the mantras, to not distract from them, you know, not to enhance that silence. Or basically, it's almost that the music almost disappears around them, you know. So it's not in front of the mantras, you know.
About the experience of mantra and then commuting other things, communicating other things. There's this piece of surrender in playing music that we're kind of touching on, of the no mind and the group, and then surrendering to the mantra. What is it that is coming through you? Or do you see it as coming through you? You're saying creating space around it.
What is it that's coming through? Well, we don't know. That's the point. And I think because we're not connected to our egos with the music, we're in a mysterious place. We don't know. We don't have any answers for anybody. When people come to us, they don't get a diploma. You know, it's something, we're all in a mysterious place, and that's where we find God. We don't find him in the house. We have to come out of the house into the garden, outside into the rain and the sun, and that's where the music is. So, you know, we all come into this mystery. We don't know what's coming through. We don't know what to call it. You can call it God or spiritual or whatever. We don't know. But we just know that it's there, and we feel it, and we've felt it and seen it in a way. We've seen it in the eyes and the faces of the people who sing with us. We've seen it in our crew, the people who travel with us, who sometimes have no some of the people that on our crew, like the stage crew, they don't know about mantras, and they, you know, they just get so touched by the, and some of the musicians too haven't had that experience, and they just feel, wow, this is a different world. Everybody's come into its communion, you know, it's satsang, it's a community, it's like a church service, but it's full of laughter and full of fun and reverence and silence and open hearts and big voices, you know. So that's what we can't label that. We just experience it, really, you know. And I think we spend, you know, you can spend, if you're a philosopher, you can spend all your life trying to explain it. But and if you don't dance and sing, you'll never really experience it. So, you know. So that's what it's all about for us. It's not that we're scholars or anything like that, but we just luckily, through our guru, through Osho, who was much maligned but was an incredible person, gave us this opportunity to feel sacred music and then to be and for Deva to have these mantras in her blood and her bones. Her parents were chanting these mantras to her, you know, when she was in the womb, and she was born to the sound of mantras, and they were all through her childhood until she rebelled, you know, which is a healthy thing to do. And so, you know, all these things just went into creating the history, so we just like to be in it.
So what's really sweet about this new record is that I really love the personality of it, which is kind of almost the opposite of what we're talking about. I love the version of the Maha Mantra on here that comes from Manoj's aunt. Yeah. Can you share your experience of learning that from him? How that came to you? I'm really curious if you can feel herself, the aunt, through that.
I mean, it's just also interesting in general how mantras come, you know, like it took us this long to actually sing the Maha Mantra and to feel ready for it. And often it does come in the form of a melody, or somebody says, look, you know, what about this version? Or we suddenly feel ready, like it took us a while to get ready for Hanuman, and suddenly we were chanting all these Hanuman mantras. So I trust that they find the right time to appear. And this Maha Mantra came, yeah, like you said, through Manoj's aunt, and she hadn't left Kathmandu ever in her life. She's 82 now, and it was Manoj's mom. That's her sister-in-law, Manoj's mom's idea to bring her to America for a few months, so they could see each other. And so Tika Maya is the name of Manoj's aunt. So she flew for the first time ever left in her life, Kathmandu. No English.
Wow.
She flew to America, and she got on the plane and she got off the plane and out of the airport, and she looks around and she says, "Is this heaven?"
And then she started to chant,
and she always chants, and she always has that devotion in her life. And when she stayed with him for 6 months, she just sang all day long, and Manoj was so taken back to his childhood, where he would hear her sing. And especially this particular version, this particular melody of the Maha Mantra. And then during that time, he came here to record with us in Australia, where we are right now. And he said, wow, this is the melody, you know, for it. We have to record this. And it had such a sweetness, you know. I just felt it just immediately, like I wanted to be in that melody, and I couldn't stop singing it. And I love that it comes from Nepal. You know, it just somehow, I'm not such a scholar about the you know, roots of mantras and the science, the Vedic aspect of them. So I was actually surprised that the Maha Mantra comes from Nepal. You know, I thought, sorry, that was just something. It was just a surprise to me. And so we recorded it. I don't actually know what she felt about the recording, but she did come to our concert in Santa Cruz and she loved it so much.
That's a really beautiful way to receive that mantra. And it totally comes through on the recording. And I love the patience involved in receiving these different mantras and the discernment you employ to decide, is it time for us to share this one or not? And I think that this version is a wonderful way to take this out into the world for the first time. Because it does have so much joy.
Yes.
And lightness in it. And I really, really appreciate that.
You like the key changes?
I say again.
You like the key changes?
I love them. I think it's just delightful. And now that I know that it was, I can kind of see it moving in the landscape of Nepal, and it's just super beautiful. Yeah.
Did you ever see on Instagram we posted the clip of her singing it, of her chanting it?
Oh, could, no, I missed that one. I will look through it and
find
it.
Yeah, you can see her. And she's beautiful, beautiful.
The other one here on this new record that I know from the George Harrison and Ravi Shankar collaborations record is Prabhuji. How did that come to you?
I always loved that. We always loved that CD, Chants of India. It came out like over 20 years ago and we listened to it a lot. And always Prabhuji stuck out for me as because it was the most melodious and sweetest on that album, and I just loved that melody. And then it was actually Manoj who said, oh, you have to sing this. It was a bit, somehow it was a bit more challenging for me with the language because it's Hindi. I don't know, like it just, there were some sounds or, you know, which were difficult for me to make. But Manoj and our friend Manish Vyas, they all were, you know, on my case in the most loving way to get it as good as I could. And I feel really so happy to be singing. This is also the meaning of it, you know, like Prabhuji, you know, my sweet Lord, or Prabhuji is the sweetest way to address the divine in our lives. Is it a guru? Is it the divine great spirit? And, you know, it just says, come and be in my heart, just dwell in my heart. And I really don't know anything about Tantra. I don't know anything about mantra. I don't know about rituals or worship, all the right protocols. All I know is that I want to feel you in my heart. And that's really me because that's exactly how I feel. I really don't know anything much and I just want to be in this space of love and connection and joy through singing and chanting. So it just totally spoke, you know, my heart. And then to have the honor to have Anushka Shankar playing on it, who we asked if she would be part of this album, and she said yes, and she plays on Prabhuji as well as on the Seven Chakra Gayatri Mantra. That was like full circle, because she was part of that recording of the Chants of India CD. She was, I think, assistant producer, or so, I don't know what the title was, but she was definitely very, very much part of it. And then to have her now be playing on it, and 20 years later with us, that's a big honor.
Well, also, I think there was there's a YouTube clip of George Harrison singing with Ravi Shankar and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
What's his wife's name?
I don't know what his wife's name is.
And it's such a, it's just so sweet just to see the three of them. George is strumming a guitar, mm-hmm. and Ravi's got his sitar, and his wife is singing Prabhuji. It's just so. It was somehow a full circle for me, with my background and everything that I've come through to hear Deva chanting Prabhuji.
And your love for the Beatles.
Yeah.
I like to have that whole everything become one.
Mm, exactly, yeah.
It's like a sweet lullaby to the heart. It gives me that soothing. It's as if I was soothing myself with that sweet love. It's very, very, very nice. And such a nice placement in the record, too. I don't know if anybody in this decade considers album order anymore.
Mm-hmm.
But I do, and I found it to be in... such a nice place there. There in the record.
Oh, Miten is a running order guru. He spends so much time on getting the right running order. So that's really beautiful. You felt that as well.
Yeah. So tell me just a little bit more about where you see this life taking you with music.
Oh, that's a good question, you know, but it's very easy to answer. We have absolutely no idea.
Definitely have no plans. I mean, we never had plans. We never had like the other day somebody said, "What's your 5-year plan?" And I was like, "What?" And we know
5-minute plan we have.
We have a year plan, because obviously we need to book, you know, concert halls and stuff. So we usually know 1 year before where we're going to be. And that's really comfortable and feels right. But we have it's beautiful because we keep it open, you know, there's no lid on what can happen, you know. And basically I always say I couldn't have imagined this either, you know, what's happening now. I would have never imagined it. Never ever in my life would I have thought that I'm a musician, or I'm a singer, or I get to be with my beloved traveling around the world sharing this. This is beyond anything I could have ever imagined. So I really, really don't want to imagine anything, because I don't want to put any limits on what can happen.
Hmm.
What about you?
So, you know, there's you're just in the hands, really. Now, you know, we never had a record company. We always said to ourselves, that this is our music and it's our responsibility and we do it our way. So you know, nobody's ever told us what to record or how to record it or what CDs covers to use or whatever. It's always been our life, you know. So in that way, it's really life and death to us, Dave and me. You know, it's all we do, and it's all we're involved in. Really, it's just this flow of energy around the music, and like David said, you know, we have a manager who is a friend of ours who takes care of all our business. So she will, you know, we tell her where we want to go, and then she takes the, and then she, you know, responds to invitations, and then the tour is set, and then we just like to travel. It keeps everything fresh. So I think we will continue to travel, even though this year was a little bit of a challenge because I had this open heart surgery in March and a slip disc in July. So, but it didn't stop us in any way. It didn't impact at all the traveling or the bliss and the joy of sharing and being able to travel to so many places and meet what we call our Sangha, which is a spiritual community, you know, and that is solid. That's just like something that's very tangible. When we come to a town, we know there's going to be 1,500 or 2,000 people or more who know exactly why they're coming to the theater. They know what we're going to be involved in. We're going to be participating, you know. So that participation creates a foundation. We're all contributing to the evening. We're not just sitting there watching a band. We're actually we're creating the music with the band. We are the choir. So you know that kind of thing creates a foundation for us to continue to travel and continue to share. So there's no reason for us to think we're going to stop doing that. So as far as we can see, I would say we will be doing this until I probably drop off my chair and have my last breath in the middle of the Gayatri Mantra. That's my plan anyway.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I mean, not you falling off your chair, per se.
Well, that too. No, Hey, listen, if I die in the middle of the Gayatri Mantra, you can be very happy for me. I think that would be the best way to go, with everybody chanting the Gayatri, you know. Mm. So I'm holding out for that one.
Hmm. Well, then, Swaha. There's been a lot of chaos and tumult in the world over the last year or so, and I'm wondering how or if that affects the Sangha around the world or how you see that influencing people's response.
Oh, it deepens. We have, the world is becoming smaller and smaller, so we're getting more and more, neurosis, and the only place we're going to be free of that neurosis is in our own being, you know. So people are very, very, the people who come to sing with us, we're very, very aware of what we're doing and why we're doing it.
Right. So it's magnetizing, you think, that truth out of people more in contrast to the chaos? Or
I guess the need is more apparent now, you know, that it's more and more apparent that we are not going to find it on the outside. And, you know, we always think we can make this world perfect. You know, we can just chisel away here and there and make it more and more perfect. But it's obviously not the case. So there is only a turning within that will, where we'll find that union and the peace. So, and we've tried, you know, like everybody's more or less tried everything else now. So it's, we are, there's definitely a more opening. There's it's beyond the usual suspects, you know, like it's, everybody is now open to this. It's, you can't anymore put people in boxes. Oh yeah, that's a yoga person or a spiritual person. I think it's everybody now has seen that there is more to life, you know, the bigger picture. So that's really very, very encouraging when we look in our audiences or the people who come to our retreats and events, that it's such a huge variety of people from all walks of life. Of course, also countries, you know, we always travel around the whole world every year, playing everywhere. And then there is 1,000 people in Siberia, as well as in Argentina, as well as in, I don't know.
Anywhere,
really. You know, it just shows that these pockets are becoming more and more bigger.
Right. That's a great reflection. And also that turning inward, but with others. I think that's...
That's communion.
Right. Communion.
I mean, that's the other thing, yes, the connection, that we all long for a connection. And when it's beyond words and singing, then that's so precious. And these spaces don't get created that much anymore. So luckily we have the mantras, we have people who create circles where they meet regularly, you know, to sing and chant together. All this is getting more and more too, which is really that's really the nourishment that we need nowadays.
So since this is the Shakti Hour and we've been talking about sacred music and the feminine voice and the divine feminine, you have the mantra Sarva Mangala on your new record. Can you talk about, both of you, your relationship to that mantra or whatever that represents to you?
Yes. It's, for me, that's such an interesting question, because somehow I never think about, apart from with this mantra, but usually I don't think about men, women, sacred feminine, sacred masculine. I don't have that. I don't notice when I'm around all men and I'm the only woman, or which happens when we do the touring sometimes. You know, I don't seem to really tune into that so much. I need feminine energy or around me, or I need more masculine energy or whatever, you know, like I don't really, it's not so much part of my, I don't know, field. I don't think about it. But I did notice over the years of singing and chanting mantras that many more of our mantras are for, you know, kind of masculine deities. There's not that much. We sing for Tara, we sing for Saraswati, Lakshmi, but there's so many kind of masculine deities. So Sarva Mangala is beautiful because it is for Durga, but I like to just see it as there's this kind of feminine space of grace and of mystical feminine. And that, I feel that's also really reflected in the music and in the melody. It's almost a little bit dark, because it's mysterious, and it's rhythmical, it's sensual, and I feel that's really expresses for me the feeling of femininity. Sharanye Trayambake Gauri
Becomes a celebration. You know, we kind of put a kind of a reggae groove underneath that, and it was a celebration of the rise of the feminine, and you know, you can see it now. It's coming all over the world, and the women are rising up, and the men are having to review the way you look at them, the way you interact with them. It's a whole new paradigm, you know, and it's a beautiful thing. Women are rising, and feminine energy is returning to the planet and to the world, because the men have just messed it up for so long. And there feels a new way for, and it's helping me as a man, a new way to review my whole outlook, you know. And it happened for me when I was in the ashram with Osho, because that was a huge learning curve for all of us devotees there, because we were learning all about how to respect the feminine and how to respect the masculine, you know, in each of us and in each of us individually, you know. So that whole movement that's happening now, it's just, for me, it's a celebration. And so when it comes to the chorus, when we're singing the chant song in the middle of the piece, it feels like a calling to not to arms, but there's a strong energy of this sacred feminine shining through, you know, and burning away all this terrible stuff that male energy has created for so long. So it's a very intense part for me. This part, I was singing. Yeah, that part, it feels like the strength, the power, not really the power of the feminine energy is reflected in that part of the mantra for me.
Thank you. So I don't want to keep you too much longer, but I would love to ask each of you to give a recommendation of some other sacred music made by women from whatever tradition. If you have a favorite artist or song or something of that vein that comes to mind.
One of my all-time favorite devotional singing CDs. She also sings non-devotional songs, I think, but she's called Bombay Jayashree. She's an South Indian singer, and the album is called Sharavanam, and it's just totally beautiful, and has the power and the sweetness and the freedom and the chanting and the sacred feminine definitely embodied in that music.
And me, I would say Olafur Arnolds. He's a man, but his music is very beautifully expressed, and it enhances such a beautiful feeling of of feminine energy and joy, and also the balance between the two energies. But the album is called Remember, and he's a musician from Iceland. Olafur Arnalds, his name is, and the album Remembrance is just so amazing, so beautiful.
Fantastic. Beautiful recommendations. Well, this has just been such a delight. And even though we aren't seeing each other and there's been some cosmic interference, I have just felt such a deep connection. I've just felt such a deep connection with the two of you over the internet here. And it's really been healing from my own heart, and great to be with you and experience the depth of your love and relationship to sacred music and the sacred syllables. And I'm so appreciative of your time and all of the work that you do.
Thank you, Melanie. Shall we end with a little mantra?
I would love that.
It's the universal peace mantra. Shanno Mitra, Shambharana, Shanno Bhavid Vrayamam, Shanno Indra Braspati, Shanno Vishnu Rukrama, Namo Brahmini, Namaste Vayu, Twamiva Pratyaksham Brahmasi, Twamiva Pratyaksham Brahma Varisyami, Ritam Varisyami, Satyam Varisyami, Tamam avatu, tatvaktaram avatu, avatu mam, avatu vaktaram. Om shanti, shanti, shanti.
Beautiful. Mm-hmm. Thank you so, so much. 1,000 bows to you both. Many blessings.
Thank you, beloved. Nice to talk
to
you. I hope we meet you again soon sometime.
Mm-hmm. I look forward to that very much. Have a wonderful holiday and time away.
Okay.
All love to you, Melanie. See you down the road.
Namaste. Naya karo.